Welcome back into another episode of the Dapped on Draft podcast. As always, I am your host, Corey Kinnon, Fake Corey Kinnon on Twitter. Before we dive in, if you're listening on Apple, Spotify, wherever you're listening, please review the show. Please, if you can, give a comment. I love hearing feedback. So this scouting series is almost over. I think it's been a really productive conversation throughout the summer so far. So, or the spring, I guess. We're not quite the summer yet. So to kick off summer scouting. We're going to continue on that avenue. And again, we only have corners, safeties, and offensive line left. So we're going to cover corners today. And joining me to talk about corners in a really in-depth episode, is Cody Alexander of Match Quarters. So Cody played DB. He's coached DBs, even at the college level at Baylor. So Cody is a wealth of information. He has matchquarters.com as his website, where he really breaks down a lot of schematic X's and O's things with defensive scheme and specifically secondary play. So I was really awesome. It was really awesome for Cody to join me and have this conversation with me. But again, it is kind of a long one, like the one with John. So let's go ahead and dive into that conversation. And again, this has been another episode of the Dapped on Draft podcast. All right, continuing on our scouting series, what to watch for when scouting position X. We're almost at the end of the road here. We are into the secondary, talking corners now. And to break down cornerback play with me, I have Cody Alexander of Match Quarters. Cody, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. Again, I've been following your Substack for a while, following your content on social media for quite some time. So when I was looking for somebody to cover corners, it felt like a really natural fit. But Cody, before we dive in, I kind of want to know how you got to where you are today in the football arena, to where you've gotten, you decided Match Quarters is where I want to go, and specifically your passion for defensive back play.
Yeah, so I played defensive back my entire life. I played corner pretty much all my entire life, played it in high school, played it in college. And then I've been kind of the secondary coordinator everywhere I've been, coaching at the high school level, did about 10 years at the Texas high school coaching, Texas high school level. And then I was at Baylor for 3 years, 11, 12, and 13, as a graduate assistant, mainly focusing on defensive back play there. So I've kind of always been around it. In 2016, I decided to start Match Quarters just because I needed a creative outlet to get out there, talking about quarters play at the beginning, but then it kind of evolved into more or less just like being more trend focused, what's going on in the NFL level, college level, especially at the Power Five level. And there's kind of interesting things that are happening in defense. I love defensive back play. I was a defensive backs coach. So I still try and find time to especially break down coverages. And then obviously off of that, how defensive backs are playing within those.
Yeah. So when I had reached out to you about covering defensive backs with me for the series, corner specifically, you had said, I would love to. I think cornerbacks are the most misunderstood position. So why is it that you believe that corners are the most misunderstood position?
So probably quarterback is the hardest position in sports to play just because there's so much processing involved. I think the modern corner now is a lot of processing as well, because not only are you playing zone, you're playing man as well. I think why it's misunderstood is I just feel like it. A lot of people just assume that it's, you can backpedal really fast, you have fluid hips, and then you're also very fast as well. And that's really not it at all. There's guys that can run track that can't backpedal or can't even flip their hips or transition that. And I think also too, the processing in short yardage, playing in a phone booth a lot of the times. And then obviously as you expand out, people just don't understand the peripheral vision, understanding route releases. There's so much nuance to the corner game. I would assume too, probably quarterback, offensive linemen, and corners are probably the three most nuanced positions on the football field.
I love it. And I love that we're about to dive into this a little bit more. So one question that I've been asking every guest that I've had on covering each of these positions are, and it's been a really good question towards guiding the conversation. So for me, my listeners are going to be tired of hearing me say this, but I say that the one trait that transcends any position, like if you don't have this, it's not going to work, is that hip flex, that hip fluidity, yes. The ability to flip hips, change directions, sink hips, whatever, that flexibility. And so that would be a huge non-negotiable for me at any position, but speaking specifically with evaluating corners, what are some of your non-negotiables? Like if a corner cannot do this, he will not see the field.
Yeah, I mean, really, you have to be able to run to play corner. That's kind of one of those other non-negotiables. But it's more than just straight line speed. It's really just being able to have that transition speed. Remember, you're already at a disadvantage going backwards, right? So can you have that short burst? Are you able to maintain leverage? Can you play within a tucked position? Those to me are all of these kind of non-negotiables. When you're really looking at cornerback play, it's all about body position. And so do they maintain good body position? Do they keep their feet underneath of them? Those are kind of the things that you want to look for in a corner. You always want to start with the feet, and then you want to start with kind of that body position. Are they in their tuck? Do they play within a tuck? Do they play within the ability to where they can explode out of their break or transition to with a vertical route or a post route or kind of a deep over route? Do they allow themselves to have that body positioning to then be able to translate to whatever route that they see?
I love it. And corner is one of those positions where you don't see a lot of guys who run 4.5s, see a lot of guys who run in the 4.55s, 4.6s at the NFL level, because these wide receivers aren't running 4.5s, 4.6s either. So having those guys that can stick with them is huge. So now let's get into the weeds a little bit. I have talked to a coach before who told me, he said he had a scout come to his school one time and tell him, nobody's coming to your school to watch a zone corner. So the precipice of, for the most part, there's a lot of cover one, cover three schemes out there that do want a lot of guys who can bail. But for the most part, NFL teams want guys who can play man, who want guys who are sticky in man. And a big part of that is being able to play press man well. So just diving into press man technique a little bit, let's work from the ground up. Kind of when you look at a corner's feet, when they are lined in press man, what are you looking for specifically?
I'm looking for a narrow base. Even the taller they get, I still want a narrow base. I think that the little bit of a misnomer here is that you want your feet shoulder width apart, and that's not necessarily true. You want them within your shoulders. You actually want to have a real narrow base when you're in press. You want to have a flat foot stance, meaning that both toes are going to be even. You can have one slightly back just as kind of like an anchor foot, kind of like you would an off man, wherever your leverage is. But for the most part, you want to have your feet within your shoulders. You want to be a little bit knock-kneed. And I know that sounds a little bit something, again, no one ever wants to be knock-kneed, but all I mean by that is you want your knees kind of pointed in. You almost want to have like a pyramid shape or a triangle shape from the knee down to the feet, but the feet want to be inside the shoulders. You also want a corner that's going to have his hands at no lower than his knees. This is not the Deion Sanders flat back, bent over. I mean, people want to, again, there are certain people who are just absolute freaks. He's one of them. That doesn't mean that 99% of the other players need to be playing like that. So typically when you see this, you want to have a flat back. You want to look like you're sitting in a chair is what you want. So as we go up, we want that. We want the hands on the knees. We want to be looking like we're sitting in a chair. We want our eyes down towards the hips or the knee. Depending on who you talk to, defensive back-wise, some people will say the hips, other people will say the knee. I know the knee sounds a little weird, but your knee is going to point where you're going to go. You usually can't lie. You can't point your knee to the right and then be going to the left. So it gives you a little bit of that. That's something that I've kind of been kind of learning of different, where are we putting our eyes. But that, to me, in press, it all starts with the stance. You can also be one of those where you can be too close. You want about a yard to a yard and a half. I think the more that you watch cornerback play, the more you see it more of a soft press. I know we all love the Instagram where they're basically assaulting each other at the line of scrimmage. That's not football. We know that. Go watch in the NFL. You can't touch a receiver past 5 yards. So your skill level has to be very, very high. hand placement has to be correct. What happens if you put your hands lower than your knees is the first thing you have to do is holster them. So when you bring them up to holster them, that's also going to make your back go up. And now I'm standing straight up, which is going to make your feet splay. And so they get wider. So I don't want toes that are duck footed. I don't want them pointing out. I want, if anything, I want them pointing in. Some of the best corners, man corners that you'll ever see are pigeon toed. And they're a little bit bow legged. Like that's one of the things, like if they're a little bit pigeon toed and bow legged, they're probably a freak at man coverage. Like that's just kind of like because of the way that that works. So that to me is what you want to look at when you're looking at a press stance. From there, it's all about the footwork. Where does their peer step go? Do they bring their other step? I call it proactive step. It's also called a peer step. What's their initial step? Does their other foot follow with them or do they get wider? You have some DBs that'll take a peer step, but then they take another step to match it outside instead of bringing their feet in to come under them. That's why you also too, you want your feet underneath you want them thinner than your shoulders, because when you take that proactive step, if you have a kind of an adjustment step, if you have that adjustment step, now you are shoulder width apart. So now you're in control.
Fascinating. That's again, that's something that I've kind of learned to look for, but I've always just been like, oh, if they can mirror the guy across from pretty well and their feet aren't cinder blocks. So that's the little nuances I love picking up when we're doing these things. So, but again, speaking of an NFL corner, we've seen Sauce Gardner come into the league and dominate from day one. We've seen even a guy like Tariq Woolen get drafted day three. And kind of, he played well as a rookie. He took a step back as a sophomore, but so I think that's kind of the body type that NFL teams are finding success with are these longer guys. So how do you feel like the length of a Sauce Gardner, the length of a Tariq Woolen, those kind of guys, how does that affect their footwork and press?
Yeah. And actually Tariq Woolen's a really good example. I did a breakdown on him on Match Quarters. He's actually 6'4", 210 pounds. So I would say that he's an alien in terms of a man, but he is, even though he kind of struggles in zone, he is a true boundary corner in the sense that he can match up physically with any receiver that you put up to him. And he is also man. He has a really interesting technique where he actually lines up at about 2 yards. And he is a true mirror man, meaning that if you step with your left foot, his right foot is going to mirror your step off of it. And because he gives himself some depth, he's actually able to do it. It's a very interesting technique. I haven't really seen it. Normally you hear like mirror motor because I'm inching back and I'm kind of, but you're mirroring the leverage of the receiver, not necessarily the foot of the receiver. And with his levers, he's so long that he really is allowing you to kind of gain that yard, and then he's going to put his hand on you wherever. So the offhand jam, meaning that if the receiver breaks to your right, you're going to use your left hand. It opens your hips up. Sauce is an interesting study as well because he's 6'3", 200 pounds. He actually takes a false step in his press technique. So he's actually going to take his inside foot and he's going to move it forward. The reason why it works though is because immediately after he's pushing off and getting a kick step. So he's not actually losing anything. In fact, one of the biggest things that fans probably get wrong and like lower level coaches just in general is this illusion of a false step. Yes, there is a real false step where you take a full step in the wrong direction. But what we're talking about, even at receiver, is you have to come to balance from a static position. So you're actually moving your feet closer together so then you can explode. So even though he's taking a false step with his inside foot, And by false step, it's not a large one. We're literally talking like a couple inches, but it allows him to kind of gather himself and then kick step out and gain some space. And so all of that time, that receiver's also doing the same thing on the line of scrimmage. And so both of those guys being taller guys, the one thing that you notice is their fluidity, right? And again, it goes back to their footwork works. They stay within I call it the Madden ring. This is a good visual for anybody that's listening. So imagine you have a Madden ring around you. Do your feet stay within that Madden ring? These guys are both 6'3 plus. their feet stay underneath their shoulders constantly. And that's how they're able to do that. When you start looking into like NFL draft and things like that, if you ever read long strider crossover steps, like those are all hallmarks of a tall guy that doesn't have his feet underneath of him. And both of those guys are extremely well at keeping their feet underneath of them.
Yeah. And just for the listeners, when you see those, like those long striders, those guys who get out beneath their base is the term that I've heard and that I tend to use as well. Those are the guys who tend to lose their footing then when they go to change direction, the guys who slip and fall down. Yeah. So I'm glad that we're sticking with kind of the Sauce and the Tariq Woolen, those guys who have the length to punch with a little more grace than so when I first started evaluating creating draft content, I would watch a corner who had really good feet. I'd be like, but he's not throwing hands. And I have a really good buddy who played at the FCS level, who's also gone on to do some like a director of player personnel stuff at the college level now. And he's like, well, no, like that. I want to see the lower half first. Like that's all. If his lower half is fine, that's great. So I guess my segue then, and using a guy like Sauce, using a guy like Tariq, but even some of those smaller, twitchier guys who still have a good punt. Like I think Denzel Ward of the Browns uses his hands pretty well. Like, so what kind of timing are you looking at with your hands? Like, obviously you don't want these guys just punching right off the line of scrimmage. You want them lunging out and punching. So when you are looking at that punch in press, man, when you are looking at when a defensive back does engage with his hands, kind of what's the timing you're looking for there?
Yeah, it's really more of a cutoff tool. I call it a steering tool. That's another misnomer around corners. Again, why I said with you, it's like it's such a misunderstood. I've had plenty of coaches scream at me during practice of why we're not getting hands on receivers for things, and then you kind of have to give the wink, wink, nod, nod to your players, like, bro, it's okay. Like, don't. I get where you're coming from, because you can't always have your hands on the receiver. It just doesn't work. Here's the thing: the receiver doesn't want to be touched. And if he really doesn't want to be touched, he's not going to allow you to touch him. Now, we have these shots of like L'Jarius Sneed, who's probably one of the better ones, or like AJ Terrell, who's pressing like 70% of the time. But like Sneed, who does the true like punch press, if you really go and break those down, it's all cover two. So he has a primary safety on top of him. So he can take a chance. If he misses, then he gets in trail technique and he's fine. So what you really want and you're looking at is footwork. We're playing basketball. Most of the best corners are really good point guards, like defensive point guards, right? Because they can stay in front of the lane. They can stay in front of the defender. In my time, I've really found out a lot of these guys that are really elite corners, then you go and you check and you're like, oh, well, they were really good at point guard. Like that makes sense. Or they're a defensive specialist on the basketball field. So a lot of times that translates because of the body positioning. Like I don't want to just open up and hinge open and go get dunked on. In basketball, I have to stay square. I'm working at a 45 degree angle or I'm working flat. Right? Like I'm not just going to flip my hips and open up. And I think that to me is where you want to watch it there. Then can I get, not only am I punching in the right spot? Am I punching the pec? Is my thumb up? Right? And I always think about it this way too. So visually, if you're doing dumbbell bench press and you're just going straight from your pec out, where's your thumb? It's thumb up, right? If you would never turn the dumbbells down and press with your thumb, like with you almost like a chicken wing with your thumbs down. So your thumbs, I tell kids all the time, especially young kids, like I tell them all the time, like your thumb's going to tell you whether you're doing it right or not. If your thumb is up, your body's telling you, you got thumbs up. You did a good job. If your thumb's sideways, okay, you're halfway there. But if it's thumbs down, you ain't got no power. Your body is telling you whether you're doing it right on hand placement. You want it on that pec, because that is able to give you want to open those shoulders and you want to be able to steer them in the right direction. And that's where the hand placement starts. But going back to the original thing of like, I'm not worried if a guy never really gets a hand on the receiver. I want to look, is he swiping at the wrist when he's in phase? Is he tucking into that hip and that low hip? Is he getting hit, what I call it a hook, whereas he's getting his elbow into that armpit and being able to press that receiver to the sideline? To me, that body presence is much more important than, okay, he's really good at a two-hand jam. Because a lot of times a two-hand jam too, like you're locking your hips. I mean, you talk to NFL corners too, like The only time you're really two-hand jamming is if you know you can – it's a slower receiver. You're really trying to knock them off the ball, and you've got a cap safety behind you.
Awesome. Awesome. That's great. That's the information that I wanted to get at there. So, again, another area that we have to talk about, because the NFL is trending in this direction where they want 11 personnel on the field, but even sometimes 12 personnel on the field, that they're trying to create mismatches for either in the run game with that tight end, that second tight end as well, or they're trying to get a mismatch in that passing game with the tight end as well. So it's not always an assumption now that when an offense comes out in 12 personnel, that a defense is leaving, they're staying in base. Sometimes you still will see a defense come out in nickel. Most of the time you'll see a defense still come out in nickel if an offensive lines up in 12 personnel. So about 75% of the time now, at least, again, I cover the Browns. The Browns are who I'm familiar with. Jim Schwartz ran nickel 75% of the time last year. So we have to talk about nickel corners and kind of how that differs from outside corners. And so when we're talking about press technique, everything that we covered, kind of what changes when you're asking a slot corner then to line up at the line of scrimmage?
Yeah, so this is not necessarily press anymore. We're talking about catch coverage. We're talking about scooch. So now we're going to be kind of in no man's land, 4 to 5 yards off. And now, because you have to be, if you press, if they're on the line, you can press. Usually the rule of thumb is if they're on the line, you can press. If they're off the line, then you're playing catch. Just because they have the option of motion, right? They're kind of they can move across. Therefore, I don't want to press, and now I have to arc all the way back. I usually want to stay at about linebacker depth. So now all we're doing is we're changing it in front. Instead of like a press technique, now we're really more of like an inch technique, a kick step, something that's going to be really shallow, really quick. We're going to have our feet anchored in the ground, and we're really reading the departure speed of the slot. The slot's going to tell you what the route combination is going to be, or if it's going to be a run. And so being able to read and react off of that. Also understanding, you know, where are your dividers? Do I have a post safety or do I have a cap safety? Cap safety is going to stay on the hash. Post safety is going to be in the post. So like that changes your leverage. Are we funneling to it or am I funneling out? What's the width of the receiver next to me? This is why I think people just think this isn't Madden. I can't just take a corner with skills and attributes and then just say, oh, well, he'll be great in the slot. This is why some guys can't ever transition to the slot, because not only do you have to know the primary coverage, but you have to know what everybody's doing in that coverage. You're essentially a safety if you really think about it, because you've got a toe in the linebacker spot, but then you got a toe in coverage. And so even if you are, here's the other thing. College is really hard for slot corners to figure out whether they're good or not, because we play so much bracket at the college level. And all bracket means is that corner, that slot corner is going to be outside leverage, and he's got all of two up and he's got all of two out. And he may have safety help, but the overhang technically is the safety coming from the table. So when you're trying to project a guy into slot, you really want a guy that can move really, really well in space. He can tackle well in space. And then he's sturdy enough that if he has to be near the box, that he can play as an overhang. Even at the corner level, because unless you're the Cowboys or the Browns or now the Commanders, and you're just going to play cover one on every down for the most part, I know it's hyperbole, but then you don't necessarily need a third corner. You need somebody that can play in a lot of different spaces. So what you're really looking for is, can he play in a phone booth? Is he physical at the reception point? Is he physical with receivers? How does he play? Like, for instance, if I'm going to be looking at a college corner, I want to know what's he look in, but I'm trying to project him in the slot. What does he look like in as a nub tight end? When he has a nub tight end, how is he fitting the box? How is he coming into the box? Does he have a natural feel for where he fits? Is he just running up the field, or is he backpedaling is at the point of attack? Like, to me, those are things that translate. So I want to find things that translate into the slot. I want to look at condensed formations. I want to look at any time he's in corner over. I want to look at any time he's up against a nub tight end, because those are going to give me an ability to do that. The other thing, too, with these guys is typically we're not seeing the 6'3 corner moving into the slot. Jalen Ramsey, again, we're talking, who has played some of that star position for the Rams and you know, for Miami. Again, we're talking about it, another – kind of a freakish athlete, right? A guy that can play everything. But when I'm trying to project that, I'm really looking for somebody who can play in short bursts and in space.
Awesome. So I want to stick with man coverage a little bit longer here, but I just kind of want to go over those same principles that we hit on in press man and talk a little bit about how things shift when you are still in man coverage, but you're playing 5-6 yards off the ball. So, you know, what are you looking for in terms of feet there? What are you looking for in terms of hands there?
Yeah, so this is really where the separation between philosophies starts to begin. Are you a kick stepper, slide? I call it slide, you a shuffle guy, or are you a march, backpedal guy? I really think it depends on the DB. This is probably another thing about defensive back play that a lot of people don't understand is not everybody can backpedal. There's guys in the NFL right now that are not great at backpedaling. So they have to use it as a transition tool instead of an actual fundamental tool. I'm not a big march guy. And what does that mean? That means we literally are marching backwards off, right? We're picking our feet up. We're putting it down. I don't like that because there's a tendency against quick game that you have to really throw yourself into a break. And so what does that do? That brings your back up. I've got to really kick it. That's when we get these bucket steps. That's when we fall down. I want feet underneath of me. As we started at the very beginning, I want my feet in the Madden ring. I want my feet underneath of me. I want to be able to transition off of that. Typically, your smaller corners are going to be the guys that can just live in back. Just because they can always kind of keep their feet. A good example of this is like Darius Williams for the Jaguars. He's now going to go with the Rams. He's 5'9". Okay. His feet are underneath him all the time. But and another good contrasting example is like the Jets. Okay. You've got Reed on one side. That's about 5'10". Then you got Sauce on the other side. That's 6'4". Sauce, if you really watch him, he's not living in backpedal all the time. Right. He's a kick stepper. Right. And I think Sherman really allowed that to be part of the kind of conversation at corner of, oh, he kind of developed this within that Carroll system, developed that kick step and really made it okay to be a kick stepper. Right. And I've even had it where I had both Division I corners. One could beat the drum, inch technique. He could do all the backpedaling. He looked great. The other one was more of a physical freak. But he just couldn't backpedal. He had these big clown feet. He was tall. He's about 6'2". And so it was just, he was longer. He needed it. Once I started really working him at a kick step, it just was like a light went off. He could transition better. His hips were more fluid and he could get in better body position. And so to me, when you go to off man, you've got to really understand, one, what is your plan through the quick game? And then what are you going to be on the transition? So are you more of a transition backpedal guy? Can you live in a backpedal? Because even in a backpedal, there's a tendency in a backpedal to stand straight up. Okay. And when you stand straight up, you got to drop down to break or you're going to bucket step. And so again, if you're a smaller corner, typically don't have issues with that. So I've always been kind of, I call it slide or kick step, shuffle, however you want to do it. But keeping your shoulder square is key. Tilted is typically, you don't want to be square anymore. You want to be more open. You want to have a transition. I always look at it like in track, is like if I'm getting the stick in track from a relay, I'm already working down the lane. So like I'm going to have my hips at a 45 degree angle so I can see, I can either come back or I can go forward. And so it's kind of that same mentality in this. My shoulders are square. My hips are kind of at a tilt. I can plant and drive down, but I can also plant and drive vertically. It's like a 2D player right there. What you don't want is to get, you know, butt to sideline, shuffle, crossover, all of that stuff. We don't want that. Off man is kind of a dying art just because press is easy. And I think like that it's, you said it at the beginning, it's like no one's coming to watch a zone corner. And I agree. But the more that we're playing quarters in the NFL and the more that we play quarters at the college level is this, and the more offenses start using condensed sets at the college level, we're going to see kind of a rebirth of off man. It's something that needs to be taught. I actually, in fact, taught off man first. And I told the kids you had to earn the right to press because it's much more technical. Your eyes have to be so much more kind of open and seeing. You have to process a lot more information because of the depth. And so press is easy because like I can teach you because you're only going to get so many routes. I mean, there's a reason why like Pat Narduzzi at Pitt, they press everybody. Why? And he'll tell you this. You get fades and you get slants. And if I only have to work two things, I can get really good at those. But what happens when we get reductions? What happens when we get motion? What happens when I have to play off? What happens if I'm playing Tyreek Hill and I can't press? right? Maybe I don't have a cap safety, so I can't be Snead and just go maul him at the line of scrimmage. So those to me are all things, but off man is much more technical, and you really have to understand the footwork and that your shoulders are your rudders, right? Your hips can be open and they can be at an angle, but your shoulders better be straight.
Awesome. Great. And can you just briefly, off man is where you hear, it's pretty common to hear the term catch technique. Could you break down what catch technique is in your definition and how that applies to off man?
Yeah. So catch technique is actually a situational coverage. Like it's a situational technique. Like if it's third and medium, let's say it's third and five. Okay. I know I'm probably going to get a hitch or a slant. They're not going to throw a fade. It's a low percentage throw. So I'm actually going to slow down my steps even further. I'm literally going to kick step, kick step, kick step. And it's going to be like inch, 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 step replace, step replace, step replace. And we're only talking about 2 to 3 inches tops, right? This isn't your 6-inch slide that you're having in like first down off man situation. So to me, that's a situational. This is the other thing. Like the more tools you have in your toolbox, the better you're going to be. That's why, like, for instance, Quinyon Mitchell, I really liked him. There's a reason why there's kind of a lot of the NFL teams fell in love with him. And the reason why is because he played in a quarters dominant system. So he had to be able to play off and he had to be able to play on ball. And so he had a toolbox of techniques that he could use. So he's real toolsy in the sense of like, because there's, when you just play quarters like Toledo does, then you can really get into the nuance of different techniques. But the problem with that is, like, I know their coach, he's really good. I think he just got picked up by Illinois, Coach Parker. He does a really excellent job. And that's kind of the conversation I have with him of, like, when you have a guy like that, building more nuance within the technical aspect instead of, like, oh, let's run all these different coverages when you don't really run that. And the problem at the college level is you have so much on-ball corner play. And then you go to the high school level and it's so much on ball corner play is that these guys then get into the NFL and they have no idea how to play off man. When you have to play off man, go look at the press rates in the NFL. Very few corners are playing over 50%. We're mostly looking at around, I would say the average is probably around a third, maybe a little bit higher than that. Like AJ Terrell, if you really ask them, dude, do you really want to press 70% of the time in the NFL? He'd probably tell you no. Right. But that's what he's asked to do. And that's what he does. Okay. And that's why, you know, it's kind of feast or famine when you press. And so, especially at the NFL, when the talent levels razor thin. So that's where that catch technique catches a kind of a technique within your man toolbox. And it's much slower down. We're going to be anchored and we're really trying to drive down on the ball.
Love it. So last thing then, before we move off into zone coverage and all of the nuances is there is when you're in press man, you're pretty much locked in on that receiver's hips, right? Right. How does it change? Where do your eyes change when you're 5 yards off the ball, then 6 yards off the ball, then, and you're still manned up against the man across from you?
Yeah. I call it the triangle, right? I want to look at the slot through to the quarterback and then I want to be able to keep my guy on peripheral vision. In fact, I taught my quarters much like I would teach off man, because it's essentially the same technique, right? Quarters are just man with rules, and typically it's just the rules are inside. And for a corner, it's basically man unless he runs a shallow right now. And so from that point, we want to get a lot of data from the slot. The slot's release and departure speed is then going to directly correlate to what I'm getting from the number one receiver. This is where a lot of people make the mistake in off man is that they just try and play press out of off man. And so you can actually steal a look when you play off. And so part of that is being able to then predict what I'm getting. And then two, off of your peripheral vision, reading the stem of the release. I think the spray of the receiver release, if you really start breaking it down, this is something I did this offseason. It's like I got some really cool, was talking to a college coach and they had this spray chart. And so I was looking at it and then I started watching more and more film. And you're like, I've always talked about angle of departure, but like really when you break it down, most of these routes have correlations to the release. And so once you start figuring out what that correlation is, then you can start predicting what your receiver is going to do if it's the slot, or then if you're getting that release, what is your receiver running? And so from there, understanding your leverage and then the spray of the release. So there's a lot more processing going on, and which is why some corners just can't ever play off. They need to have that physicality. They need to be close. They need it to be a quick trigger so they don't have to process. That's typically where you're going to see the struggle, is in that off man is processing all of the field vision. Think about it this way. If I'm impressed, I'm like a horse with blinders on. I can only see one thing, and that's the receiver. But as I move back, those blinders come off. Now I'm seeing everything. I'm seeing the people walking around me. Maybe somebody, you know, is walking beside me all of a sudden. Now, you know, and so you hear about, like, it, just using the horse as an example of, like, you know, you don't want to spook. Some guys get spooked when they take the blinders off. And so what you don't want is that. So that's why I always started with off man, because it's much more technical. The field is a lot larger. There's much more to look at.
Awesome. So I think that's a really good place to transition then into talking about zone coverage, because you did say, you know, quarters is basically man with rules, and whether those rules are, you know, palms where if a guy's coming vertically at you, you're going to match. It's a lot of matching in quarters.
Yeah.
Match quarters. That's fine. So when you are talking specifically, we can start with quarters. So, I'm just interested, this really has little to do with evaluating, but what were the principles that you mainly abided by when teaching quarters, and kind of what are you looking for in the eyes of your corners in quarters?
Yeah. So really with the corner, it just is, it's off man, right? Maybe we have a little bit more depth because we're trying to play zone. I may have help underneath. Like if I'm to the passing strength, we're probably going to build a box. So I may have the overhang in the low or the short. Maybe I have to assume I'm not. Safety help maybe on anything inside. But like I always told corners, you signed up to defend fades. Like nobody signed up to defend the dig, or, you know, you signed up to defend fades and slants, right? Because that's what you get in press. So when you play off, you've kind of expanded now the route tree for the offense, which can be good and bad. It just depends on your ability to play off man. And so what we want now is we want more of an inside presence. Outside, the old school, you know, country quarters with the guy outside leverage is typically you want that if you know you're going to get the overhang to push outside right now. He's more of like a bang to buzz. So I'm going to bang to buzz the flat type defender in quarters. But like you said, with match, we're essentially playing man. So all the off ball technique stuff that I want to see, the difference here is I want to see a zone turn. I don't want to see a man turn. Our hips should already be pointing inside to the ball. I don't want to come back around, right? Does that make sense? I don't want to, and then if I'm already pointed to the ball, then I want to be able to rip the upfield arm, open up vertically, and be able to transition vertically. I don't want to have to rip the man arm and then come back underneath of it, right? Because now I'm actually having to lock my hips instead of being on top of the ball. So to me, that's in terms of evaluating and then defensive back play. Like I want to see that. I also want to see that our shoulders are not just getting parallel to the sideline really quickly. Can you stay square through the sticks and then understand where the breaks are for that receiver? That's what you're really working in off man, is where are the breaks going to be. Get your quick read, get your feet underneath of you. When do you open up and transition? Departure speed. See, there's so much more nuance involved in off than there is in on, which is more or less just release angle.
Yeah, so speaking, you mentioned you want the hips pointed to the ball. So a lot of times people will just associate zone coverage with when the corner's bailing. For better or for worse. So when you're talking about then the hips of the corner, kind of what's the timing then? When are you hoping to see those hips open? Again, you mentioned earlier, you don't want those hips to swing open, but you also don't want them to open late as well. So kind of what's the timing of that you're looking for with the hips?
Yeah, so it really depends on level of football. So like high school level, the breaks usually are about 7 to 8, 7 to 10. College, it's about 10 to 12. And then the NFL, it's about 15. To 20, just depending on the quarterback's arm. So it's just understanding where those break points are What is the release angle? Is he releasing inside? Is he releasing outside? Is he trying to overtake my leverage? Is he okay with my leverage? Is he leaning on me? Is he running away from me? What angle of departure is he trying to go at? So then I know what are the route combinations off of that. And so really what you don't want is somebody that flips their hips way too early in the down. Right. Like if he's not stepping on my toes, then I really don't probably need to turn my hips. And we talk about breaking glass or like your cushion, and it's different for everybody. There is no just like hard deck. I tried to never give kids hard decks, because the moment that you give kids hard decks, you're creating a robot. And that means that we're going to get in a situation that I'm wrong. Right. And I don't want to be wrong. Like I don't want to give something that's wrong information to the kid. So to me, that's kind of where I'm at with that. And so when you're looking at it, how often are they opening their hips too early? Are they able to stay square? You do have corners that like just refuse to open their hips. And then like, how often are you collisioning the receiver or getting ran by? The problem too, like on post routes, for instance, in quarters, because like what's the quarters beaters? It's Mills. It's the dig post, right? If I turn my shoulders parallel to the sideline, even on a vertical, I'm going to have to step back before I can step forward. I want to keep those shoulders square so I can plant off that outside foot and I can stay on top of that post route as it transitions into a vertical route. And so that's where you want, even if the hips are open, I want to see those shoulders relatively square through that. Otherwise, I know down the road, you may be able to play a fade route because you're opening your hips and you're on top of it, but you're going to struggle defending a post route, especially if we're going to play quarters.
Awesome. Awesome. And again, we hit on this in man coverage. So I just, again, 75% of the time teams are playing three corners on the field. Playing in zone as a slot, you have a lot of options, right? You have both sides of the field where you're not playing along the boundary. So there's a lot more green to cover. And obviously there are different rules and different zone coverages. So you know what your responsibility is going to be, but kind of how do these things kind of change for a slot corner then?
Yeah. You got to know where the running back is. You know, am I in the fit or am I out of the fit? Then is there an open, where's a three tech? Where's a strength tech? Is it three tech away from me? Are we in a 5-man front? So both B gaps are closed. Do I have to, most typically when in nickel, you're going to have a 4-down, there's going to be an open B gap bubble. How are you defending that? So do I have to close the B gap? Are we closing the B gap with the defensive end? Am I having to fold in? Is the running back to me? If he is, then I need to hang for the RPO. I'm on the passing side or the read side. If he's away from me, I need to fold quickly. Then what's the departure angle of the slot? Are his eyes to me? Because if it is, then he's probably blocking me. If his eyes are downfield, then I know I need to play pass. So again, understanding that, then off of the running back is, do I have a push alert? Do I have to push with the back? Am I in charge of the back? Are we matching DBs with receivers, or are we pulling the chain? Like there's so many different things like within coverages that a slot has to now understand. Like I mentioned at the beginning of like, how are we doing motion? Are we traveling the nickel even in zone? So are we giving a manned indicator, or are we going to pull the chain and just let it go? Typically in cover three, they'll just pull the chain because they got a DB on the other side. But in quarters, I got to know, or cover two, are we giving a manned indicator? So am I nickel travel? With motion, is it quick motion? Is it horizontal motion? Is he going back to the ball? How all is that going to affect? Do I need a slingshot into the post? Are we rocking and rolling? All of these things come into play when you play slot. That's why slot is not going to be, it's going to be more of a cerebral guy, a guy, again, that can play in space, that understands coverages, that understands blitzes, that understands run fits. So even if you are a third corner, if you're not playing bracket, which we don't play a lot of bracket in the NFL, then you have to then know all these little different nuances of the game and where you fit in into that.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up like it's not Madden earlier, because I think people growing up playing Madden just assume, oh, your third best corner is your nickel, because that's how you arrange your depth chart to get your corner in the nickel, and it's just not that way. And there's just so much, and we'll talk about the run defending here a bit more in a little bit, but again, you mentioned like these guys have to sling into fits. Like they have to be able to, it's a whole lot on top of what's going on behind them as well. So, but before we go into that run defense, just one more area of coverage that I want to hit on is kind of the ball protection aspect of cornerback play. I think Trevon Diggs is a good example of this, you know, where his ball production is off the charts. It's off the charts. Like he racks up interception after interception after interception, but his down to down play might not be as consistent as that ball production tends to cover. So for you, when you're talking about ball production, like how important is it to create turnovers as a corner versus just, I just need you to be in phase and be disruptive at the catch point?
Yeah, I think Trevon Diggs, when he first got into the league, and you kind of, if people remember that viral clip that went over about Ramsey and Diggs, Ramsey was, and people thought Ramsey was taking a dig at Diggs, with saying that, oh, he's an on-ball corner, I'm an off-ball corner. All that really was talking about different techniques. I think with Diggs, it was like feast or famine because he was playing press. You have a decent rush in front of him. So is the ball coming in underneath? You know, he's kind of out of position. In fact, Deron Bland is essentially, if you go really look at all nine of his interceptions, like most of them are on sail routes to the outside that the quarterback threw late. So he's actually out of position and the quarterback threw the ball to him and he was able to undercut it. Now, that being said, he caught those balls and then he produced a touchdown afterwards and set an NFL record. But I think you have to take turnovers with a grain of salt. Turnover is basically a luck. You're going to be, if you have 3-4 picks in the NFL, you had a pretty dang good year. Because the ball placement, I'm looking more like ball disruption. Are you contesting the catch? Are you punching the ball out of the hands? Like how often when the ball hits the receiver's hands, are you able to rake it out? Are you in proximity to make that? Because turnover is volatile year to year. Now, people that can consistently do it, that's great. Like Diggs is another good example of like, hey, he came back after that, after his first year and really worked on zone technique and became one of the better trap corners. Because if you're going to play cover one in volume, you're going to play trap cover two as your changeup, and he just really excelled at being able to read releases and the quarterback and do all that. So kudos to him. Hopefully Deron Bland can add that to his game as well. It'll be, you know, Witt's gone now. He's with the Commander. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays in more of a zone scheme with Zimmer. So when you look at things like that, you want ball production, but it's not necessarily, are we getting a lot of picks? Much like defensive linemen will tell you, kind of sacks are more of a quarterback stat than they are a D-line stat. Don't get me wrong, if you're getting 15 to 20 sacks, you're beating your man on. But remember, there's more plays in a game. I mean, over a 18-game season or 18-week season, think about how many plays are being played. 15 sacks is good. There's a lot of plays in between. So what are you doing in between that? And that to me is, I want to see first down touchdown rate. How often when a catch is there, how many first downs are you giving? How many touchdowns are you giving up? That to me is more of a way of looking at DBs than just like purely, hey, they're getting a lot of picks. Because that, again, can be volatile year to year. I want to see PBUs. I want to see things like that, like contested catches, not necessarily just, hey, are they getting a bunch of picks?
Yeah, I tend to think that's kind of the same way as well. Like, I just want to see you in phase. I want to see you making plays at the catch point. Like, that's what I need. So last element of obviously playing not only corner, but playing defense is you have to tackle, right? Like that's a core pillar of playing defense is you have to bring the ball carrier to the ground. So, but a lot of these corners that we see, especially at the college level, the ones who tend to get in the NFL aren't as bad, but you'll still see it at the NFL level. They don't really want to tackle. Or if they do, they're doing it in a way it's like, is this safe or are you going to get yourself hurt? Like,
right.
I mentioned Denzel Ward earlier with being really good at his hands. Denzel Ward also tends to get concussions at an alarming rate because of the way he throws his body around and run support. So like, how do you teach tackling? Do you think it is coachable or do you think it's more of like a toughness mentality that you either have or you don't?
You can teach the skill of tackling. You can't teach the want to. I think that's the biggest thing that you look at. Tackling is a skill. You can teach where to put the shoulder, get the head out of it. And that's typically what it is you have a guy who is skilled at covering, but doesn't really understand the physics and the skill set of tackling, which I know that sounds crazy, but if you really think about it, let's say the NFL has about 65 plays on average, you would assume that probably almost 40 of those are actual tackles. So you're talking about 2/3 of the game is an actual tackle, and it's mostly not going to be the corner. So these guys aren't necessarily working tackling all the time. They're working coverage aspects. But I do think like you can teach a player how to tackle correctly in the correct body placement. And a lot of that too comes down to angles, right? Especially near the box. Normally you're not worried about a corner who is tackling a guy who just caught a fade route, right? Or it catches a post and you just kind of get the swipe the legs, you get him down. We're talking about, can he come up and make a tackle on a hitch? You know, is he going to be able to set the point or make a tackle on a screen when he's the primary run support on that? So those are the things that you can work in closed spaces, but a lot of it comes off of leverage. A lot of it comes off with how are you being taught, like where to put your shoulder, right? Where you don't want your head across. And to me, those are all skills that have to be taught. And one of the things that has always kind of been a problem with the NFL is that the tackling aspect of it, right? It's just like it is becoming a bigger part. Trust me. There's a guy who does consulting out of Scotland, Richie Gray, and he does an awesome job. His bags are starting to show up more and more across the NFL, and he's being asked to do more and more consulting in the NFL. And the reason is just because you want to maximize when you make contact on a runner, you want to make sure that he's coming down and you're doing it correctly and keeping the head out of the game.
Awesome. So again, talking about the slot in terms of run support, we've talked about, you know, if you're going to be on the field 75% of the time and we're taking a linebacker off the field to get you on the field, then we need an element of you can step into the B gap. You can step into a contain role every once in a while. Just going back to the importance of the nickel, and it's not just like, oh, this is the third corner who doesn't play outside. He has to play. No, there's like a lot to it, especially on the cerebral aspect of it. But Cody, one last thing that I always want to talk about with every single position as well, and this is kind of how we'll wrap up as well, is defining what is coachable versus this is a trait that you either have or you don't. Like, I think flexibility is one, like that's hard to opening up a kid's right. hips is really hard. Some of that, the mentality aspect, like the toughness you were talking about, like you can't teach, like, so there's some, I would say intangible aspects, but also some physical aspects that you just can't teach. So when you're talking about the cornerback play, and when either my listeners or those who create draft content or evaluating these college players coming to the NFL, when we're looking for like, yeah, he doesn't really have that right now, but he can get there versus he doesn't have that. And I don't think that's something that he can learn or grow into at the NFL level. Kind of how would you break those two things down?
Yeah, I think when you're looking at corners is I want to see, are they a one-trick pony? Are they really good at press? But then when I see them in an off-ball situation, they struggle. Or is it vice versa where they're kind of better when they can see the ball, but then when they're on ball, they kind of struggle? You know, like you said, hip flexibility, being able to turn and run, those are kind of innate things. You can kind of see that as hey, how is he transitioning in the run? How is he matching up? Is he always behind? You know, does he use his speed to catch up? Because those are some things like, look, if you're a 4-3 corner and, you know, but you find yourself always constantly in, you know, kind of a trail position, and now I'm out of phase and I have to run all the time, but I'm able to catch up. Like those are things that, how often are we out of phase, right? How often? That's why I think contested targets are a much better way of tracking things. Is like, how often is that person actually around the ball when he's being targeted? From there, I think footwork, a little bit of footwork can be fixed. But for the most part, you know, their natural alignment, I mean, it's probably not going to change that much. There's some things that you can correct. It's almost kind of like when you talk about like a quarterback's throwing motion, it can be fixed to an extent. Running form can be fixed to an extent. But at the end of the day, like our genetics are our genetics, you know? And so that's kind of what you want to see. Sometimes too, like if a corner is too physical, that's usually a red flag of like, okay, what are we going to do when the skill level's even? If you're going to be over aggressive and too physical, you're probably going to lose out more often than not. So I want to see somebody that kind of keeps a cool head, is always around the ball. But yes, I do agree with you. There are certain things that can be fixed at the next level. Like, for instance, Derek Stingley's probably a good example of, like, he played on ball corner. He goes and plays in cover two. Lovie Smith probably hadn't played cover two since high school. And then it took him a while to figure it out, but now he's one of the best corners in the NFL. So, like, you, the skill translates across. It's just, you've got to have time, as you go across that processing skill too. That's not something that you necessarily as a draft nit can he process? You can maybe get a glimpse of it when you can look at off ball. Don't just watch press clips, watch their off ball clips as well. What do they do against a reduction or a condensed set? Because to me, those are things, how are they communicating? How are they transitioning? When my receiver runs underneath, am I just standing there, or am I trying to find work? Like, those are all things that you can look at that translate to the next level.
I love it. All right, Cody. So, about to wrap up here, I always like to give my guests one opportunity. Is there anything else that we missed that you think is vital to the cornerback position that you feel like we need to throw in here at the end?
Yes, I think you made the statement of, you know, everybody wants a man corner, and I do agree with you, but I think the NFL is moving more towards zone. It has in the past 5 years. So what you're going to see is more and more corners who have primarily been on ball their entire career, probably since they were 12 years old, are going to start struggling. And it's going to be a little bit, you're going to have to give them some time, just because that transition to on ball to off ball is difficult, as we stated. When they go to their DB trainer guy, he's playing, I mean, go look on Instagram or Twitter, it's all press. Right. So what are the transition tools? Like, how are we going to, those are the things that are going to have to be, developed as they get going, especially in that zone. So I just want to make sure people understand, like, it's not all about press. And if you go and look at the numbers, most of the NFL corners aren't pressing as a majority of their skill set. It's more off ball. And the offenses are doing a really good job with pre-snap motion and formations and moving guys around to get guys to not be necessarily pressed all the time.
Awesome. Again, it's Cody Alexander of Match Quarters. He has matchquarters.com. He's also all over Twitter. I see a lot of stuff all the time, and just some really good highlighted learning, quick hitting learning sessions from Twitter as well. So, Cody, thank you so much for joining the Daft on Draft podcast, and you are welcome back anytime.
Yeah. Thanks, Corey, for having me. Appreciate it.